welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. New ABCA podcast sponsor Driveline are longtime friends, and I've used many of their products when I was coaching in the youth camps now. If you want to truly optimize your pitcher's workload, Pulse from Driveline Baseball takes simple pitch counts to the next level. Pulse is a wearable sensor that precisely measures every throw your pitchers make on a daily basis. Pulse tracks both throw count and throw intensity. Trusted by MLB organizations like the Cincinnati Reds, elite college programs, and individual athletes at all levels, Pulse is changing the way throwing workload is managed. With the Pulse Team dashboard, you'll be able to make data-driven usage decisions to optimize training and injury prevention for your entire team. Visit drivelinebaseball.com/pulse to revolutionize your pitching staff's development and health today. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. Continuing our 2026 ABCA Hall of Fame class podcasts, Steve Ruzich has been a fixture at South Suburban College in South Holland, Illinois for four decades, building one of the winningest programs in NJCAA baseball history. With a career record of 1385 and 817 through 2025, Ruzich ranks fifth all-time in wins among NJCAA coaches. Under his leadership, the Bulldogs have captured 15 regional championships, made two NJCAA World Series appearances, and earned nine regional runner-up finishes. The program's best season came in 2005 with a school record 51 wins and an .823 winning percentage. Ruzich has been named NJCAA Region 4 Coach of the Year 14 times and has coached six players who reached big leagues, including Tony Cingrani and Rob Mikowiak. Inducted into the NJCAA Baseball Coaches Hall of Fame in 2014, Ruzich was among the inaugural recipients of the NJCAA Coaches Legacy Awards in June 2025, an award which honored the all-time winningest coaches in NJCAA history. Let's welcome Steve Ruzich to the podcast. Here's Steve Ruzich, South Sub, 2026 ABCA Hall of Fame class, but 1,385 wins. Fifth all-time NJCAA now, 14-time Region 4 Coach of the Year, NJCAA Hall of Fame, but also got honored with the Legacy Award last year, I think, too, as well. So, Steve, thanks for jumping on with me.
Thanks for having me.
And we go way, way back.
Yes, we do, don't we?
Way back. By the way, congrats on having the field dedicated in your name.
That was a great event. That was a couple weeks ago, and just tremendous with Ryan, especially, you know, what it's all about with our alumni coming back. And it was a weekend where we did it with the golf outing the day before. So it was a long weekend and dedication on Saturday. And it was just tremendous, man. It worked out as well as it did. It only spent for about 10 minutes, but the weather cooperated. And it was just a great event for everyone.
Rough estimate, how many hours have you put in field work on that field?
You know what? Somebody once told me the great Jim Aducci that played, you know, professionally one time when he showed up at the field with the White Sox summer program, and I was dragging the field in between summer games, and he looked at me, he comes up and goes, how many times have you think you have dragged your field? I go, why did you bring that up? I have no idea. But no, it's, you know, just like every coach, man, it's dedicated, right? The one thing you want is a beautiful looking field. So I enjoy doing it too. It really does.
Yeah, but I've seen you there, like even like not your events, even the other events that you host, you're there working on the field.
Yeah, I am. I just something that is home to me, and just you know, I want kids to play on a good field, man. It represents our institution. It represents myself, and as much as I can be there, it's always a good thing. And you know, and hopefully, you know, down the line, maybe get some of those guys to be able to play here.
Has much of field work changed over the years?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, yeah. I mean, what's been the biggest difference besides is material probably the biggest difference with how much better the material is now?
Yeah, material's a lot better, right? If you have it level, I think it does definitely, you know, help with the, you know, the drainage of everything. But, you know, obviously, as much as the guys hate it, you can't live in the Midwest without a tarp if you have natural surface.
How often do you have it laser graded, if any?
No, we haven't laser graded. We have vans come out, and we did it about 4 years ago, I want to say. So every few years, man.
It makes a huge difference.
100%.
Huge difference. Hey, you've coached six big leaguers now. What are some of the common traits with those guys?
You know, it's funny you say that because I, you know, it's amazing how the guys that have made it, I say this, have probably been one of the most cockiest players that played for you. But, you know, I always said, you know, with Cingrani and Burdick and those guys, you know, they believed in themselves, man. And I'll never forget Cingrani when he told me when he got drafted by Kansas City at the time. By the Cincinnati Reds, he said to me, he told the agent, the faster you sign me, the faster I make it to the big leagues. And sure enough, he did, man. So, we call about cockiness, right, Ryan? But we talk about, I think, every player has to have that inside of them, you know, and you don't have to show it, but you got to believe in yourself. You don't believe in yourself, you got no chance of doing well at any level.
Is the difference maybe cocky? Maybe they're not good. Like self-confidence, they're good. I think that's the difference. Like if you call a kid cocky, it probably means they're not very good. They think they're good, but they're not good. But if they're good and they think they're good, then you call that self-confidence.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that goes to tens of, you know, nowadays, right, with bat flips and, you know, and stuff like that. That's what I call cockiness, right? That's a cockiness kid right there, too, where the other guys, you know, just believe in themselves and kind of stare you down and stuff like that, which is always a good thing.
You know, it's been kind of a point of emphasis in the office. Now, we're going to touch on it probably at the convention is sportsmanship. You know, because I think you see it now at the higher levels and you see what happened at the Little League World Series this year, especially the games to get there. You're starting to see that trickle down to the lower levels a little bit now, which is not a good thing. And so I think we need to try to rein that in somehow. What do you talk to your guys about with that as far as how to handle in-game stuff in the dugout? How are you talking to your guys about how to handle that stuff in-game?
Well, I think the biggest thing is it starts on day one, man. What's accepted in your program and what's not. I mean, we don't talk to the other team at all. And I think if you look back, all the good teams do it the right way. And the right way is, hey, they beat you and shake your hand and say goodbye, right? There ain't no bad flips. There's no point. There's no talking to the other dugout. But, you know, it's challenging because, you know, I'm being honest with you, there's a lot of other programs that let them get away with it and just think it's part of it. And they let their dugouts talk to one another. And, you know, I just say, hey, let our actions show on the field, man. You want that dugout to shut up, then go score some runs.
Man, when does that show up as far as guys, probably first couple fall games? You may have some new guys that haven't heard that yet, correct?
Absolutely. And you got to say something, right? Right away, I said, really? Are you going to say that? You know, so you do have to nip it right away and just tell them. And I don't know, I don't really care if it bothers them or not, but I've always was brought up the right way of respecting the game, respecting your opponent, respecting the umpires. And I think that's one of the great things that you do is you just go out there and you play the game the right way.
This is a listener question, actually. They want to know who is your favorite employee that worked for you for 3 days.
My favorite employee
that worked for you for 3 days.
Mel Kaczynski is my favorite guy, right? My main guy at the field. That's absolutely right.
What about Rick Odette?
Rick Odette, yeah. You know, Rick Odette was my assistant coach, you know that. He worked with me for 2 days, and I got him a job down at St. Joe in Rensselaer as head coach.
He also wanted to know, over time, what do you feel like has changed with the game of baseball for the best?
From the past, from now?
No, what's better about the game now than when you first started?
Oh, I just think kids are stronger, right? I think they're finally realizing it's a year-round thing as well. And I think what's changed a lot of it in a good and a bad, right, is going back, we didn't have any indoor facilities to work out with. So when I was coaching, I mean, we used the gym out here, and I mean, we used to throw fly balls up in the lights to make sure that the guys would work, to make sure that, you know, they were working against not losing the ball in the sun. I hope we didn't do any eye damage to any of those guys that looked at those balls that we threw up in the gym. But, you know, now we're able to work out in indoor facilities and, you know, and maybe not be as far behind for the northern schools when they go play the southern schools. Because, you know, a lot of these good universities, man, they got indoor domes now and they can inter-squad and play life, you know, go live. I remember hitting in a batting cage. That's what we do, right? It's crazy. So I think that number one has changed the game of preparation to get ready to, you know, for a season, I think is one of the greatest things.
You look, and that's one of those things you don't realize at the time, but you look at the facilities in your area with the Bow Dome, you know, the Max, like those areas have been around. You think about it now, they've been around for 20, 25 years now. And you think about the amount of good players, and there's always been good players in that area. But for them to be able to train the entire year now and not kind of thaw, which good or bad with arms, but I think that's where you've seen, we've produced some really good big leaguers here and good college baseball players a lot more, I think, over the course of time here because of those indoor facilities and giving guys an opportunity to work the whole year.
Yeah, no question. You know, and it's just not, you know, obviously it goes beyond, you know, just the hitting aspect. It goes to the strength conditioning coaches that you have and stuff like that. And, you know, I think too, right? I mean, I don't know if it's good or bad, but, you know, a lot of these guys are realizing that it's a year-round sport now as well, man. So you take a couple weeks off and then you start training again for baseball. Because I don't think anybody realizes the grind during a spring JUCO season of playing 56 games from the time you start in the middle of February to the early May when you're playing, you know, here in the Midwest, you know, when you're playing a single game on a Tuesday, single game Wednesday, single game Thursday, two on a Saturday, one on a Sunday, the gruel on your body is one thing. So I think that, you know, preparation of trying to get your body in great strength during the winter, you know, will carry over through that time.
And it allows your pitchers to have a place to long toss in the winter time, where in the past, I think that was always your biggest concern as a cold weather coach, is you might have a guy go home and he's got to throw into a net or play catch in a gym. But now they've got facilities where they can actually stretch it out, where they might be a little bit closer to being ready when they show back up on campus.
Yeah, it's 100%. I mean, it's like when people go away, they're able to have those facilities where they're able to go home for winter, even wherever it is, maybe in Canada or wherever it is, and they have those facilities to get them ready. And then the great thing is during the year, too, is now you're actually throwing live to hitters inside a dome where the hitters, you know, where, you know, the pitchers are at least, you know, getting their work in as the hitters.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you that because obviously you get games in, but then in that part of the world in south side of Chicago, you may have to go back inside. How are you trying to keep guys sharp and competitive when you do have to go back inside?
Yeah, that's a tough scenario, right? I mean, once you've been outside, I always say it's always tough to go back inside. But I think there's always something to work on during the game. But, you know, it's not long, right? You go away for a weekend, you give them Monday off, you're back at it Tuesday, Wednesday inside, and then you're leaving Thursday for another weekend. So, and I think it's you know, you just got to try to stay. I don't think you have to go as long, right? You just got to, you know, go over what we need to work on and, you know, what we've seen and stuff like that and kind of go back from there. But the weather is always challenging, you know, here in the Midwest, but, you know, that's what you got to deal with.
Has it gotten better? It seems like the weather patterns have changed a little bit. Has it gotten a little easier up there?
Yeah, a lot of it has changed. I don't know what's global warming or whatever, but it's not as
climate
much.
Change. But it just seems when I talk to people back home, it just seems like it hasn't been as harsh here.
No, it has the last couple of years. And in fact, I mean, Ryan, I can go remember back when our field had a 36-inch freeze mark, and you're trying to get the field on freeze, where the last couple of years we've just kind of gone right out there and played. It's crazy.
That was always the tough part early with the frost line. People that have never been in that part of the world, you don't understand that, like, when it starts, the dirt starts to sweat. Like, it's not a great thing because you know it's starting to thaw, and it might look like you can get on it, and as soon as you step on it, you're going down like 6-12 inches on it.
There's no doubt. You know, I remember going on some trips, and we get out there, go, oh, man, it's a nice sunny day, and then you walk out, and you're walking in the soup, right? But that's how nice it is if those guys that have the turf, they don't have to think about that.
2005, did you know that team was going to win that many games?
Yeah, it was, right? It was kind of crazy, right? I mean, We actually had four, you know, Division I transfers that came back that year through the time. So, you know, I didn't realize, right? And I mean, and then we went into 2006 and we won 35 consecutive games. That's pretty hard to do, right? And I mean, I just showed up and made the lineup, man, and those guys went out and played it. And that's hard to do, right, when you're playing 5-6 days a week, man. But God, that was something else. I can't even imagine. And when I look back at that, how that really was, you know, you just get gamers to show up every day, and you got to definitely have the pitching to do it. So it's crazy.
Your time playing at St. Francis, did you know you're going to get into coaching?
No. I thought I was going to be a big league baseball player. You know, I did get drafted, but I did never even thought about coaching, to be honest with you. I think probably when I found out that, you know, the strike hit in 1985 when I was playing with the White Sox, that I probably, what am I going to do now? And, you know, and then I did everything underneath the sun before I became the baseball coach here at South Suburban. So I was a head cross country coach. Believe it or not, I was assistant men's basketball coach. I was assistant women's basketball coach. I was the head of the intramural program, and I was actually the first year I was assistant women's softball coach before I took over in 1986. So I told everyone I did that for about $12,200 too, and we somehow still made it. But then when I started off in 86, but I never thought I was going to get into coaching. But just being around the game, obviously, was the big key for me.
What was the final straw that was like, okay, I need to start doing this?
Well, I think what ended up happening between me and you as a player, I went to a workout with the Milwaukee Brewers, and after I got released by the White Sox, I had a great workout. And then they came up to me and after the workout, and there were kept a couple guys afterwards, and they said, hey, if you have any questions, let us know if we don't keep you. And they kept like three guys that keep me. And I said, you know, you're 22 years old. We want our guys in the big leagues by the time they're 23. So I felt that I was still good enough. I haven't played since then. And I said, boy, now I need to do something else, right? That was the end. I knew that was the beginning and that was the end. And then I said, well, let's get into coaching here.
I drove up to Chicago after my senior year for a workout with Bill Brick with the Pirates. And I kind of knew I'd played in the Cape. I kind of knew it wasn't going to happen. But Bill Brick goes, hey, you'll be coaching with your dad in the spring.
Yeah, how about that, right? Nothing wrong with that.
You still heavily involved with youth baseball in the area? Are you still running a bunch of youth stuff in there?
No, we're not doing youth. You know, we used to do the camps, and then when COVID hit, we ran out of the camps and stuff. So the only thing we're doing with the youth is more or less, you know, just running tournaments off our field. That's all we're doing with the youth.
What do you feel like youth players, parents, and coaches need to hear right now?
Well, I think we all need to be realistic, right? And what are the goals, right? I mean, you know, I know this is an old school comment, but, you know, we look back at the days, and you know this, and you probably did it. Whatever sport was in, we played. You know, even if we weren't good at it, if we played football, we'd pick up football games. And we're in hockey, you know, whatever it is, we pretended we were hockey players or whatever it was, basketball players. You know, I think it's good, but I think – honestly, I think a lot of the kids are probably, I think, getting burnt out. You know, a lot of these guys are starting in February at the age of 9 and 10. I say that all the time. I'm in an indoor facility. We're getting ready for college games, and here comes a 9 or 10-year-old group coming in at the end of January and February, and I'm saying, why aren't you guys playing basketball, right? You know, and then baseball is great, don't get me wrong, but I just think you know, there's just so much. And whether your body breaks down or your mental aspect breaks down, I think that's the case. And then, you know, not everyone's going to be a big league. We know 1% of the people that ever get drafted is 1%. The 1% of those people that get drafted make the big leagues is less than 1%. So, you know, really it's the dreams of what you're looking for your child, right? You know, it was a good tool. It's a great experience, and have your kid go get his education at whatever school. And the most important thing is, I think, is as they grow up too, right? Is we're all caught up on image. We're concerned about what school a kid goes. So when we go out to dinner, we can tell him he's going to this great school by a name, but they don't realize you're paying $60,000 a year and your kid's not playing either.
I think we almost have to go in like two directions with the youth kids now. It's like, okay, it's okay here. If you have a child that they are a one sport athlete, okay, here's the template for them to stay healthy. Now, if you have a multi-sport athlete, that's good too. Here's the template to kind of keep them healthy too. I think because I don't think that you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube with only sport. And it's not just the men, it's the women too, where you have girls playing one sport. So how do we keep those single sport athletes healthy too? Because they do need some shutdown periods. And I think parents just don't know. So I think it's more of an education piece. Like, okay, if you have a multi-sport athlete, cool. This direction's good. Now, if you have one that's only playing one sport, like this is what they need to do. And here needs to be some time for them to take away or go do other things. I think just from a mental health standpoint, but also a physical health standpoint, I think we got to help that group too, that they do have some one sport athletes. Like it's just, that's not going away.
No, I think you're 100% right with that. Right. And let's look back and probably look at your youth times and stuff like that. So whoever the best 12-year-old kid never even hardly played in high school or college or two. And that break is so important. I think your body needs it.
What about for high school and travel youth parents, coaches?
Well, I think it's kind of, obviously it's, I will say this, I've noticed where the toughest thing I feel in summer ball right now as coaches for us at our level is there's not an emphasis on winning anymore. It's all about developing. They tell these kids, right, they develop and we're going to get you exposure. But there's not one thing that comes out of winning, you know. So when you get some of these kids to your program, they don't know what that means because – you go to a tournament, you play on Wednesday, you know, we play Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and something about these tournaments are starting even earlier, but you're getting these kids, and Ryan, let's be honest, if we don't make it to Sunday, well, there's a tournament next week. Now, you go back to not even that long ago, maybe 8 years ago, you were playing for something in the summer. You were playing to try to get, you know, to Farmington, New Mexico, right? So you're playing for something. Now, if you want to go to a World Series or you want to go some, if you got the money, you're going. So I think the emphasis as they get older in high school is tougher because on us is because we all want to win. And a lot of those places and some of those summer programs don't emphasize that on. And I do get development, don't get me wrong, right? But I think there needs to be something of how important winning is as well.
When somebody says winning baseball, what does that mean to you?
Well, I think if you're winning baseball, that means I want to get guys from winning programs, right? That's what I want. I think that's the key of our trying to recruiting, right? Is to get into places where people have won, and that to me is important because I always say this, right? What are we afraid of? We're afraid of people getting hurt when they lose, and we're worried about their emotions. But you know what? When you lose a tough game, right, it makes those kids a little bit more hungry the next time around. And I'm talking even at the younger level. You know, you don't want to see your 10-year-old or 12-year-old kid cry. I went through it. I've coached those kids that's happened too. But you know what? It made those kids stronger and it down the run.
Feel like you learn more from the losing, don't you?
Well, I think so. I mean, I definitely do, right? Because it makes you appreciate winning more. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You know, if winning doesn't mean anything, then you go out there and go, that's okay. We always say the old statement, what is it? Hey, would you rather have your team win and, you know, you go 0-4, or would you have your team lose and go 4-4? Which one do you want? Which scenario you want?
With the ever-changing landscape of the four-year recruiting stuff, has that affected you guys a whole lot?
Not as much, no. I mean, for our school individually, no, because, you know, we're not one that gets a lot of the transfer portal guys, so it doesn't affect us too much as well.
Feel like the 20-round draft is good for baseball?
Yeah, I think so, right? I mean, obviously, you look at guys that, you know, get drafted lower in the rounds. And, you know, everyone, it's their dream to get drafted by a professional baseball team, right? So, but we look at this as what happens to those guys. And I know there's guys like Piazza and stuff that were drafted lower and stuff like that get chances. But how many of those guys, you know, never make it? And how many, you know, and what's killed it, right, obviously, is minor league baseball. They've gotten rid of a lot of minor league teams. So they're, how are you going to keep drafting more players?
That's what independent baseball is for now.
Correct.
Like, you're still seeing guys make it to the big leagues that would have been those late round guys. They're just doing it out of independent baseball now.
Yeah, a lot of them did it, especially around this area too. They go to those places to play the independent ball, which is great.
Has your mentoring skills changed at all over the years with the newer generation?
You know, in a certain way, I think it has, right? You have to take a back seat. You know, you can still be, you got to still be tough, right? Like I always say here, for someone to play here, they know what they're getting themselves into. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing either, but there's a lot of discipline. There's a lot of old school that goes with it. But I think that you have to change because you have to read kids better. And I think that's always been my strength in coaching, is I can read kids. I understand when a kid is down, if there's some other distraction he's got going on in his life. So I think you got to be a little bit more of attention to that, where, as we all know, negative sometimes being negative to a lot of these kids is they don't understand that. They take it as you're yelling at them, and they don't understand that it's to inspire them and to get them to be positive players.
I just feel like they internalize a lot more. I think they're more empathetic as a whole, and I do feel like they take a lot more of that constructive criticism to heart, where you do have to kind of explain a little bit more, you know, the old listen to the what I'm saying, not how I'm saying it.
Yeah, and I mean, as harsh as I've been sometimes, a lot of these guys, and I have, you know, it's the way I am, and, you know, I put your heart and soul into it. But I've always, in 40 years that I've been doing it, I have always made sure if I did, you know, get into someone's grill and talk to them and yell at them, that I always, before they left that field, we had a discussion of why I did that. So I think that's never has changed. So I think that will always be the way you do things.
How often do you meet with them in the fall?
So we just finished fall baseball. We do have a strength and conditioning program coming up that will run starting next week. And that will run till the end of November, into early December. And we got a strength and conditioning coach, so I kind of stopped by just to see and check in with them.
I like that your graduation rate's on your website, by the way.
Yeah. The graduation, that's important, right? I mean, I will tell you this, Ryan, I really believe, going back from when I first started coaching, at the JUCO level, you would, you know, 40 years ago, you'd get guys that had bad ACT scores, guys that weren't very good academic wise. And it's really changed, because I think the kids now find out that, hey, you know, JUCO may be the way to go, because I'm not going to be playing at a 4-year school until I'm a junior. So they are coming. So I think we're definitely, no doubt, getting better student athletes in all our sports here at the college, but especially baseball too. I think we had like 9 academic All-Americans alone last year. So our kids are understanding. You know, the most important thing is, right, they need to know if they're going to move on to a 4-year school, which we've sent, you know, quite a few guys out there, that you got to get your, you know, your associate degree and you got to graduate.
What are you relaying to those guys when they do get an opportunity to a 4-year school to kind of prep them before they get there?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a different level, right? Let's be honest. You're the best of the best when you move up the level, and it's getting even tougher each level here, right? So, but I know, I think our guys are schooled pretty well of the work ethic that it takes. But, you know, the competition level, I think we've always played a great competition. You know, during our spring trip and stuff, we go down south and, you know, play the Logans and the Wabashes of the world. And then we go, and we always go to Texas every year to play the best in Texas. And that's to prepare you for the end of the year. But you know what? Let's prepare you to see how good you really are. And, you know, a lot of those guys we have played at through the times through Texas, you know, you see a lot of those guys in the big leagues. You know, I mean, I remember Little, the one guy that pitches for the Cubs now out of the bullpen. we faced him from San Jack, and he was one of their project guys. So, you know, it's good for our guys to see that. And I think that's what the preparation of playing at a high level will get you to get, you know, prepare you for the next level.
Those guys that are moving on, when you talk to them, what are some of the eye-opening things for them when they do get an opportunity to go to a different place?
Well, I think they find out that it's 24 hours. You know, they got things that are, you know, that, you know, you got study table, you got weightlifting, you got this, and there's not as much downtime as it is, you know, at anywhere. So I think that's the big thing too.
Yeah, I call it a lifestyle. And that's what I always try to relay to people. Like, if you want that, like, for people that want that lifestyle, it is a lifestyle. You don't get to put it down. If you want to be good, it's a lifestyle, but it's going to set you up for a lot of success later on, because you're going to be willing to do some things that the people in the real world have never had to do before.
No, and you know, and you make it, right? It's just like here, you want to be structured, you want to be organized, and so when those kids get to that next level, that they understand that, and they understand, you know, from that 4-year school level too. That's why, you know, this in the real world, that's why a lot of people like to hire athletes that, you know, for jobs, right? Because they're dedicated, they're on time, and they're accountable.
Illinois recruiting's competitive. I mean, you look at the amount of schools, not, you know, a lot of 4-year schools, a lot of JUCOs. I mean, how have you been able to sustain your success for this long with getting good players? Because you've done it year in, year out of getting good players to come there.
Yeah, you know, isn't that changed? Isn't it funny how the internet and all these PDR and all these things have changed everything, right? I remember used to go into the high school games during the spring playoffs, and you're still recruiting for this year, right? It's crazy, right? You go watch a regional or you go to the state tournament, that kid's still looking to go to school. Now you got to do it a year in advance, right, of where you're at. I have two young coaches that do an extremely great job. All three of them do at the recruiting level of finding the players. But again, I make sure that they are looking for character, because to play here, I, you know, as many years I've done, I need good character kids, man. I don't care, you know, how fast you are, how great you are. You better have good character. So we do a lot of checking up on high school coaches. I have my coaches reach out to the summer coaches. And then when they come in, I think that's the most important thing, man, is having guys of good character with good work ethic.
How many of those guys have played for you? I know Lee played for you, but how many the other guys
played? Yeah, almost a lot of my assistant coaches have. My pitching coach played for him, Kyle Hallberg, and Marty Joyce is one of our guys. It's my assistant coach. Those guys do a tremendous job with Lee. And, you know, Marty was in the area too. So, you know, they know what the program's about.
I feel like it's easier because those guys can relay a lot of that to the players about, hey, here's how Coach Rue is. Like, it doesn't mean that he doesn't like you. Like, this is how he is.
Exactly right. Right. It's always called, right. We've always talked about the good cop and the bad cop. Right.
What does this mean for you going into the ABC Hall of Fame?
Oh my God. Right. I mean, it's beyond words. I think, you know, I've attended this thing for 35 years. Right. You know, I started going to 40. It's always to me, I always say the best of the best, right? I always enjoy listening to some of the speakers. I always got to be there for that first guy to fire me up. It's to get the juices flowing. But to be part of the guys that are in that Hall of Fame is beyond words. I'm totally humbled and honored for this award. I'm really looking forward to it because, you know, I go every year and see, and I never thought, like, hey, one year you may be in that. It's not what I am. I, you know, whatever. But it's just beyond words, and I'm really looking forward to that opportunity in Columbus.
At one point in all of those, did you feel like, okay, now it's my turn to try to give back to the younger coaches that are there? Because those of us I've been going for a long time, and when you first get there, it's like, okay, I'm going to shut up and listen. But at what point did you figure out that, okay, now I can actually probably instill some wisdom to the guys that are coming behind me now?
Yeah, I mean, talking to some of those guys is great, but we all know this, right? We never know it all, right? So if I always said this when I went to that ABCA convention, if I can pick up one new thing every year I go there, it's well worth the trip, right? And I think it is. And then, you know, is there any better fraternity than the ABCA? I mean, let's be honest, right? With coaches, with baseball guys, being around, talking to different coaches and different thoughts and meeting new people, right? And it's brotherhood, man. It's what it's all about. So it's always been something, like I said, man. I mean, we've gone to many, many of them. Boy, some some bad rides and some bad weather sometimes, but we had to get to that ABCA convention in Nashville, Tennessee, when the roads were ice when we were heading through Louisville and Kentucky. I could tell you that. I didn't know if I was going to make it.
I like asking about inexpensive experience. What have you learned, good or bad, from watching what other people do over the years?
Well, again, I think it's something that you pick up from each coach of, you know, that you play for. I mean, I think I was very, very fortunate to play for Gordy Gillespie out of St. Francis, probably one of the greatest motivators that there was, right? And then just, you know, coaching against different guys. And, you know, you said trying to be like this, right? Trying to mentor different things. In our region, I'm trying to mentor the younger coaches sometimes. And mostly, I hate to say this, it's on behavior, right? Of how you act when you do different things. So, but picking up different things was always the key. That's why I went to the convention, I told you. Every time you could pick something up was always a great thing.
I think it's harder for the newer generation of coaches to maybe reach out. I feel now, not that it's imposter syndrome, but maybe a little bit, where I think people are a little more guarded because they don't want to act like they don't know, or afraid to ask questions because they don't want to look like they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I think so. I think some of them do, right? And, you know, and some of the ones are, you know, timid to do a lot of things in their program, right? I think sometimes the younger generation wants everybody to like them. You know, the players like them, and that's good and dandy, but obviously you got to remember you're the one that's in control of the program, man. That's the biggest thing.
Has the game slowed down for you in the dugout over the years? I haven't seen you coach in a while, but I can imagine you still get fired up.
Oh, man, it's in my blood, right? I mean, here's my deal. I always say you have to be as most active. For those kids to respect you, you still need to do as much as you can, right? So I still throw batting practice, even though I've moved up from throwing batting practice, right? Make sure you get behind the L screen. I almost gave up on hitting ins and outs. I did do it last year, but I blamed it. It was too cold early in the year, so that's why I didn't have as much strength. And for now, I still do coach third base in the spring. Just as long as I don't get drilled over there again, which I did last spring. But I just try to be as active as I can. And no, and I it's always right. I always look at it as it's always a teaching moment in the dugout, right? Whatever dugout it is, right? And obviously, I think that's the thing. I don't think I have really slowed down. I think I've taken a deep breath, obviously, where I think the toughest thing, I'll be honest with you, when I first started off coaching was you can't play for them, right? You can't. Because I was a catcher, you know, I was a hard-nosed guy, and I always thought, why would they do that? I would never do. And that was the first tough thing that I had to get rid of in my early days of coaching. Like, hey, nobody's going to play the game with the passion that you have. And that's what I still do. You know, the greatest word I can still say, I got passion for the game. So as long as I still have that, you know, I still like being in the dugout, still like coaching these kids.
Everybody's got to answer this one. Do you have a fail forward moment, something you thought was going to set you back, but looking back now, it helped you move forward? Could be personal or professional.
Yeah, I think we had a couple tough years here, record-wise. And the question becomes is, am I still doing it the right way? What do I need to do? And I think that's something where you look back of, you know, because I think we've only had a couple of years we've been under 500, and I think we had back-to-back years, and I'm like, all right, we need to reevaluate this and see where we got to go from here. And we did. We got back on the winning track and stuff, but there's always a moment there, right? Then you wonder, are you doing things the right way? Am I, you know, what should I change and stuff like that? It's worked for so many years. Why is it not working now? So, yeah, I think there's always that in anybody's code, in anybody's life, let's put it that way.
What were adjustments did you make coming out of those couple of years? What did you adjust?
Well, some of the thing was is character kids, right? I just don't think we had good enough players. I think we had good enough players, but not tough kids, right? Because that's our type of, that's who we are here, right? Is we've got tough kids that play for us that are always going to play hard, man. And that was the big thing. And I think we kind of got away with that, where we kind of went with maybe some more talented kids, but kids that didn't have great work ethic. So, and again, right, it goes back to the first thing we talked about, winning. Those groups didn't know how to win, man. And it didn't bother them. That was the most tough thing to me, right? You know, hey, we know we're all not going to go 56-0, where some teams have, obviously, that LSU team did last year. But we never know that. But just as long as you play the game hard and play it the right way.
How do you grade that out in recruiting? I think that's the toughest thing to grade out now, because obviously, the lower-level coaches want their kids to get an opportunity to go to places. So, not that they're dishonest, but especially if somebody – you've known so many coaches in that area. If I'm a high school coach in that area and I see a kid that has some talent but maybe needs to get tougher to help them have some success, I might send them to you because you might toughen them up a little bit.
Yeah, and thanks. I appreciate that, because I know some guys go, well, he needs you. Well, what is that? All right?
What do you mean? But you also need to win.
That's right. And this kid needs you, and, you know, it needs direction, and he needs that and stuff like that. So, I think, you know, the area going back for some years ago, I mean, there were coaches that strictly, if you were going to go JUCO, you were coming here. And obviously now, you know, there's a lot of great JUCO programs now that are out there, and a lot of kids – and you know this, a lot of kids make those decisions. A lot of parents make those decisions. Where I thought in the past, a lot of time was the coach would be a bigger influence than he was compared to now, to be honest with you.
How do you re-engage every year? You're still so fiery and passionate about coaching. How do you re-engage every year?
Well, I think about the break, right? You know, I mean, I'll be honest with you, like you just mentioned, you know, I think like now this break right now that we have off, and it's never off, right? You know, I'm also the AD, so that never ends. But that, you know, you got now until, you know, October, November, you know, December, and then I will get fired up at the convention and come back and start over. And then, you know, I used to coach in summer programs, man. And now that I don't do that, so I think all those breaks that you have, and this is what I'm talking about with the kids that play, you need a little bit of a break. So after May or, you know, comes to the end, and, you know, you got the break of June, July, August, and then you just re-fire up, man.
How are you mentoring the other coaches in your program, the non-baseball coaches in your program as an athletic director?
Well, I mean, my coaches are tremendous, man. They understand where I'm at. And like you said, you mentioned that a couple of the guys have played for me, so they've been through our program. So I think they kind of understand the way things are run here and what's accepted and not accepted. So, the mentoring of them is just the very – fortunate that they have played for me.
When you have to hire another sport coach, what are you looking for?
Oh God, right. I've made some good choices. I've made some bad choices, right? We've always said one thing, I think, as a coach, you got to read people, right? I think that's the biggest thing. But you got to read people in the way that you have to look beyond winning and losing. And I mean, we all want to win. I've always said this, what we got to make sure in other coaches is he going to be structured, organized, where those kids that are going to play for him are going to have two good years of experience by coming and making the right choice here. That's the most important thing, right, is making sure that you have those type of people. And we've been fortunate because we've had a lot of guys that have been here for 18, 20 years, you know, of coaching. So it worked itself out.
How important is the interview process? I put my AD hat on sometimes. I think it would be hard for me in an interview because sometimes people are just really good at interviewing. Doesn't mean they're a good coach. It just means they're really good at interviewing. You know, I think that would be really difficult as an AD, is like trying to get that right on the higher part.
Yeah, and I think it is. And sometimes that's why you got to have a committee, right? You get someone outside to look outside of it too, and, you know, get their perspective of it too. And, you know, we always have the thing of don't make a decision within 24 or 48 hours. Think about where you're at with everything.
You have any other routines that you like, daily routines that you've developed over the years that you feel like help you? It could be morning, could be evening routine.
Yeah, I eventually I used to call it working out. I mean, I don't know if walking is anything working out anymore, right? But no, I think for my mind's sake, I've been fortunate too. I say I take the dog for a walk. My wife laughs at me. No, you're going for the walk because you got to get out, right? I'm one that one. I'll be honest with you. I cannot sit around. During COVID, that was one good thing. I really found out that my wife even asked Patty, said, when are you going back to work, right? Because I'm just always like kind of on the go. But the other mental side of thing, I think it gets me away from everything. About five years ago, I invested into a hot tub. So every night I meditate for like 20, 25 minutes in a hot tub. And you should see, it makes your mind really relax and your body relax. And it makes you fall asleep earlier, even though my wife says you don't need that hot tub to fall asleep early. But I look at it that way. And then, you're laughing about this. I live in Joliet, so I drive to South Suburban every day. It's 45 minutes. And on I-80, sometimes it can be an hour, as we well know, or whatever, especially the roads all day. But that time there in your car by yourself is amazing what it can do for you. Come up with some great ideas, some great thoughts. Sometimes you drive by, and now you just miss the exit. Say, oh, my God, there, I just missed the exit. But I think those kind of things always help.
I think the car's a meditative place, too. I really do. Hey, when you sit in your hot tub, do you have a set? You just sit and kind of let your thoughts go? Because I don't think people do enough of that. Just sitting, I think it makes people really uncomfortable. And I think that's why a lot of people don't like meditating, because you're going to have a lot of thoughts. And eventually you just have to sit with your thoughts and let it decompress. But there's a lot of really good research coming out now. It actually makes your gray matter grow in your brain if you meditate.
No, it's amazing, man. I think I have five different spots in my hot tub, and I move around at it each time. But it's amazing what you can come up with, because you start thinking about what lies ahead for you at your job, with the team, what can you do. I start thinking, what lineup am I going to make? It's just amazing how it works for me.
What are some final thoughts, or maybe some other shout outs you want to give? I know you got a brief amount of time for the ABC Hall of Fame banquet. Are there any other shout outs you want to give?
Oh, come on, man. Let's go. You've been around your dad, and you've been around your brother. Is there anything better than your family? And that's the one thing about this college here. My three kids went to school here at South Suburban, okay? All three of them, okay? My wife, she went to St. Francis. She followed me as a baseball player. And we all know this, right? If you're going to do this and have been married for 39 years, you got to have the MVP at home, man, that she allows you to do what you do. And she always has been. She's been the rock of the family. I'm a big family guy. My kids have, we got six grandkids. We get together every other weekend or whatever to get together. And that's the most important thing to me. And that's what this program is about family. And I think it showed when we had that dedication, when all the alumni came back, because they feel like they're part of it. And I think that's what separates our program from a lot of other places, is I've instilled that since I went to school right here when it was Thornton Community College. I coached there for 40 years, and we've always treated the last kid on the team like the first kid, so they feel at home. And their teammates are their brothers, and just like at home, man, my family is a number one to me.
I think that's that fine line, especially early on. And I was terrible at it, that fine line of making sure you're putting all the things you can into your job, but also not sacrificing what's going on at home. I was awful at it. I'm still probably bad at it, just as far as trying to put everything you can into your profession, but also not sacrificing what you have going on at home. How were you able to separate those things?
The drive. Yeah. The car ride. I'm dead serious. It's 45. By the time the game's over, right? Let's be honest, right? You're looking now, by the time you meet and you get done things at the field, that's 40 minutes. Now you drive in your car for 40 minutes. And I've always been able, majority of the time, and my wife Patty will tell you, is I never bring it home. Okay. And she's great, because she's part of it. She knows these kids. So sometimes I talk to her about it too, but very rarely do I bring it home. And if I do, it's got to be something really bad that I bring home. But usually that separation of that car ride and afterwards will make sure I don't bring that home.
Thanks so much for your time, Coach. Appreciate it,
man. And I can't thank you enough. Man, I could go on for a while and everything, and I really look forward to seeing you in Columbus. Again, thank you for this opportunity, and thank that committee, man, because this is the best of the best, baby. Yeah.
Hug everybody in the Midwest for me, please.
I will do that, baby. Thanks, including your brother. Yep. I'll talk to you. Yep. Thank you, baby.
Those of us who have coached and recruited in the Midwest know the job that Coach Ruzich has done to make the South Suburban program what it is. He's dedicated a lifetime of blood, sweat, and tears to make it one of the best in the country. So happy for him to be recognized this January in Columbus. Thanks again to John Litchfield, Zach Hale, and Matt West, and the ABC office for all the help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email, rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok at @coachb_abca. Direct message me via the MyBC app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you.